Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
I am a working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son. I am a working man, oh yes I am. I am a special agent of the Lamb.
And you're listening to Life from the Path. Listen here. Listen. We have done upwards of 560 shows, and still you can't keep your flabbering giraffe mag.
Me and Boo were talking about a couple things.
No. No, that's not the situation. Mike was talking to the room. No one was responding to him or talking to him about anything because we were trying to start the show. And he's just sitting there leaning back, just talking to himself. It's like, hey, man, Ben is actively starting the show we're about to do.
Listen to me. I can see it in my mind. I'm sitting here. I'm like, if you look over there, Mike will be going, making still. You're 40 years old.
And here's the thing. I'm going to tell you two stories. One quick story. Okay. So I listened to the show from last week. Yeah, and like for the first like 25 minutes of the show, Boova's microphone wasn't on. I'm like, the Lord loves me. But here's the thing. Boova's voice carries to every other microphone.
I was going to say,
So you could hear very clearly what he was saying. And then Ben figured it out half hour in. I'm like, the Lord still loves me. But this isn't as good.
I'm glad that the bellwether for whether or not the Lord loves you is me being muted, but then somehow still being heard.
Why can't you be obedient to what the Lord wants to bring me?
Hey, Boova must decrease.
Listen,
it's
to
John the Baptist.
I pray constantly that the Lord shuts me up if he wants to.
Yeah.
So far, he has not.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. We're praying for the same thing.
Probably. If you love me, pray for the Lord to shut my mouth, because that is a good thing.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. It's still time to bail. You're 2.5 minutes in, and I'm just the show. This is how the show goes. Jared, I think, will rescue parts of the program, but we will ruin it probably in spite of it.
Okay. It's not too late to mute Mike's microphone right now.
Yeah, you know what you can do? You can also zoom in on your internet browser to 400% only to Jared.
Hey,
in case you're here for him,
it's a great idea.
Yeah, this is gonna be all right.
We have one camera that enables that.
Would it be a little blurry or?
No, are you blurry when magnified, Jared?
Maybe. Maybe.
I'm not sure the quality of our cameras.
What a fantastic first interview question. Welcome to the show. Are you blurry when magnified?
Bigfoot is blurry when magnified. Every picture I've ever seen of him is blurry.
Indeed.
Okay. All right, you're listening Live from the Path. Here's what we got going on the program tonight. First, we're going to talk to Jared Horace. Jared is from Sheepgate. We know Jared. Mike and I, actually, I think everybody's had folks that they know or care about, shepherded or whatever, go through Sheepgate, and it's a great organization. And so, I'm so excited to hear from him and just to tell us more about it, tell more about his background and story. And then kind of one of the questions, this has come up, I bet this comes up once every 4 or 5 months, like just with the interactions that the room has with people who have Jesus and forgot about it, need Jesus, and then need all kinds of things, making some rough decisions or whatever. I think it's difficult to go, like, I want to help. Am I helping?
The
things that we're doing. And I think maybe part of the answer is it doesn't get any easier. In fact, the more that you care about people, like, you're always going to be in a gray situation somewhere. But anyway, I think that'll be something interesting that maybe we want to talk with Jared about, too. So I'm excited for that. Boova's got an Ask the Pastor. What are we talking about?
We're going to talk about in Genesis 32 when Jacob wrestles with the Lord.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if there's no new revelation that I've found or anything like that, but I wonder if I've read it differently recently. And I'm just interested about specifically Peniel in the story of who he's wrestling with. And like how to take that in. Like there's a dude named Peniel, and I'm just trying to figure out how to take this in, or if I'm reading it incorrectly, if there's something within the Hebrew that I might just be missing in the storytelling. And so, just want to ask you fellas what you're thinking about that piece, because I think it helps me understand a little bit about personifications of the Lord in the Old Testament and where he shows up what I should be expecting from that.
El means God. Peni, or Pene is really what it is, it means prep the elbow. God preps the elbow.
Yeah.
Preps the elbow.
Macho man Randy Savage style.
I'll double check the Hebrew on that. But
I'm almost 100% certain that's wrong. Preps the elbow. Because very, very specifically in the story, he grabs his thigh.
Yeah.
If you would have said, yeah, the Lord preps the thigh, I probably would have been more likely to go, hey, that's
wait a
the
minute.
Story.
Is that the thigh like the rest of the Old Testament thigh?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Most
puts
of the
hand on the thigh?
Most of the thigh in the Old Testament is the genitals. It's not the thigh.
No, yeah, exactly. No, and there's like a ligament on the back of the knee that it's being specifically.
Let's hope so.
All right.
You say.
All right, okay, we're going to head up with that. Mike, did you want to talk about...
I don't know. Here's the thing. Sometimes I like to think above my station, like I have a philosophical thing to talk about, and then I spew it out, and I'm like, man, I'm so dumb. That's not even a good question.
Every time you do, I say to myself, the Lord loves me.
Here's the thing.
The Lord loves me when Mike says a thing. Hey, I was thinking about the concepts of eschatology, and I really was like, do I truly understand Daniel 7?
No,
and I'm just like, no, you don't.
I'm very used to being the dumbest guy in the room. And so, like, literally 20 minutes I'm driving here, and I'm thinking, I don't understand God's emotions right. You know what I'm saying? Like, when people say, like, and heavens rejoiced, I see, like, angels high-fiving and people. And then I just see God over there going, yeah, I knew that was going to happen. I'm like, he does emotions perfectly, but I can't. I always see emotions in more of a weak. This is terrible. Like as a weaker response,
yeah.
Right? There's something in my head that
surprise.
Goes.
Surprise! I had no idea.
Because God knew goodness, yeah. Right? And so like they're like the heavens rejoiced, and like all the angels who were smart as me are like, yeah, so great. And God's like, oh yeah, I knew this was gonna happen.
I appreciate your thoughts of God, or is he just looking around at the heavens rejoicing and be like, you guys knew this was gonna happen.
I know.
Why are you rejoicing?
I was asking. This is stupid. I was praying about it. I'm like, God, I don't understand you very well. Right, because he has emotions that are perfect.
I don't think that's stupid at all, Mike.
All of my emotions are flawed, and I'm like, how can I not understand? How do I understand perfect emotions?
I think you praying, God, I don't understand this.
That's
is
what
a
I
great
said.
Prayer.
He said he didn't talk to me about it. he's probably
maybe
like,
he goes. He's going to go to that show and he's going to ask some questions about this, and we're all going to be able to get him straight.
He's like, when we do the rapture, I'm taking Mike first. I can't take him down there.
Anyway, good luck with the show, Ben.
It turns out I don't have a question.
And there's no rapture. All right, we also have some advice on Dear Life from the Path.
Yeah, I didn't look it up ahead of time though.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. It could be a dicey affair.
Pat right. 1,000.
All right, Jared, we did it. Like I told you, we ruined it.
No, it's good. It's good.
We said the genitals. I said I wouldn't do it. Now I've said it already. Okay, Jared, just maybe let's start a little bit so people can get oriented around what is Sheepgate, and then I think I want to talk a little bit more about kind of how you got there and kind of what it means to you. But just maybe help people acclimate to what is Sheepgate.
Okay, Sheepgate is a division of Adult and Teen Challenge of the Midlands. There's these teen challenges almost in every state in the United States and also in different countries. I mean, what it is it's a long-term, 12-month usually, men and women discipleship program to help guys, men and women, get freedom from life-controlling issues. Usually addictions.
Yeah.
But there's a rarity of other things that come into play.
Yep.
And we believe that ultimately Jesus is the answer. It's a little more complex than that, but at the end of the day, Jesus can provide that permanent life change and freedom from those things.
Mm-hmm. I think it's super interesting. Because there is a consistency in that in a lot of Jesus-oriented programs, because I think people get the impression like I'm struggling with alcoholism or drugs or pornography or whatever the thing is that's just running you over, that like you gotta go, the first thing you do is some sort of like specialism around that particular thing. And I think you kind of alluded to this maybe when you're like it's more complicated or it's complex in the ways in which people, you know, people think and the things that they do. But at its core, the foundation of what any freedom looks like has to happen through Jesus. Is that the right way to think about
correct.
It?
Correct. And those things you said, whether pornography or substance abuse, we look at those as symptoms of those more deeper, complex Jesus-sized holes, right?
Yep,
absolutely. So.
Yeah. How do people do people recommend it to hear? Or do they have to how do people get us into the program?
So it's interesting. usually it's recommended by families, right? Yep. There's somebody praying for them. There's somebody thinking about them, and family will usually provide that push. We're not a government-funded facility, so the substance abuse world doesn't typically recommend us.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They want you to go to those 28-day programs that cost $1,000 a day.
Yep.
And go to your classes and yada yada yada. So we usually won't get those recommendations unless we know someone. But we are getting more court acknowledgement to where the legal system is sending people our way. We're definitely open to us coming in and speaking at a court date, and it possibly being an option for them. So
nice. Okay. Yeah. What do you think is the challenge? Is the challenge there? I mean, I suppose it may be part of it because it's faith based, but like, is there, if you're coming from the visual that there's a specialty to, say, alcohol treatment, do you feel like it takes a while for people to acclimate to think about this as being effective because it's not specialized like that?
Once they're already there or prior to coming?
Prior to coming, yeah.
And are you talking about the person that's coming or people?
Yeah, people. Yeah, people outside. Like, are people hesitant, or do you get the impression that they're hesitant that, like, because it doesn't feel like a specialty?
I think that could be the initial thought, but I think that with addiction and life controlling issues, family and those individuals just come to their wits' ends, and they're like, we'll try anything.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. So oftentimes we'll be the last stop on the house is how that's what it was for me. If it didn't work, I was going to die a drug addict and be okay with it.
So that's a great segue. So maybe tell me a little bit about, at your discretion, how much you want to share, but like, how did you end up at Sheepgate? And, you know, whatever story is before that part that makes sense.
Yeah, I hear my wife, Jared, you're talking too much. She's probably watching. Hey, don't do it, Jared.
This is the space to talk.
Yeah.
Mrs. Horace, this is why he's here.
Yeah.
We actually brought him in for this.
So, kind of interesting. I was adopted. My mother had me when she was 13, pregnant at 12. I was adopted to a good family. Moved to Chicago young, I think 5 maybe. So grew up in Chicago, and early on started having some identity issues.
Sure.
And in Chicago, kind of the, for young black guys, you know, the gangs are waiting, right? Yeah, if you have identity issues, if you want to feel like you belong, gangs are rampant in Chicago, and they prey on guys that are trying to figure themselves out. So I joined and felt fulfilled, and with that comes crime and violence and drug use, and all those things escalated in my life to where my parents kind of were like, you know, Jared's gonna die. Mm-hmm. And they heard of a program called New Horizon Youth Ministries, and they were a three-part program, Marion, Indiana, Canada, Missinabe Woods Academy in Canada, then the Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a documentary out, Kidnapped for Christ, on them. They're closed down now for different abuses, but so I went there, I visited all three programs, spent a year in the Dominican Republic, and came out worse than before. Hated God, because they were a faith-based program for at-risk teens. And I tell people they underfed you, overworked you, and didn't let you get sleep, right? Mm-hmm. With additives in between.
Sure.
So got out, mad at the world, met my wife. We got married. 3 weeks after our marriage, our wedding, I got arrested, sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Prison is prison, right?
Yeah.
Prison is prison.
Prison is prison. So, you know, you can imagine all the things, right? And then
I have a question. How was your, on your adopted family, were they followers of Jesus?
Tremendous.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was for them. Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. To me, it was for them.
Yep.
There was nothing ever personal. It was always dragging us to church.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're going to go to Awana and you're going to go to, you know, it was just stand up and worship.
Yep.
If you don't, you're getting spanked. So it was just, it was, you know, and it was in the 90s. Right. So it's just, that's what we did.
Yeah. And I suppose like the situation at the camps,
ruined it.
Yeah, well, yeah. Would reinforce
just kept
whatever
feeding it,
is.
It.
Yeah.
Ruined it for me. Yeah. Like completely ruined it for me.
Okay.
So in that, there was always some sprinkles of substance abuse, and even before the first time I went to prison, and I got out, and I went, and we adopted a child. Mm-hmm. We ended up being pregnant. He was born while I was in prison. Came home, made two more daughters, went back to prison for 5 years. And during that 2 years that I was out, addiction spiraled, came home after the 5 years, and addiction isn't the word for what I was doing at that point. I was a monster.
Yeah.
Wife and kids didn't know if I was gonna come home or not, be dead, didn't know. So
what is it in that situation? Because after you have been in prison and like you can, how did it feel? I guess like did you have a sense for like I know what I'm doing is harmful to me, to my family, or does it not feel that connected?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And I try to explain, and it's tough for me. I don't think about these things every day anymore, at all.
Yeah.
Completely removed. So I'm trying to recall the best I can. But something I tell families, oftentimes they'll say, you know, how do they choose drugs over me?
Yeah.
Or how do you go drink instead of be with your kids? And that's not even a thought.
Yeah, right.
It's not even a thought.
Yep.
And if people... It's pain. It's like we talked about. It's a symptom. Those are symptoms of pain and hurt and trauma, and it doesn't hit us until we've already done it.
Yep.
And start to come down or sober up, and then you either want to do more or you want to kill yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you're not killing yourself, you're doing more, and that's the cycle of addiction. So you're not feeling those things.
Yeah.
And it just it's an insane ride.
And that's kind of why I ask, because I do think that it's fairly common, and it's very difficult to be on the other end of someone making choices that feels like it's personal against you.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, I'm not, maybe it's not true all the way around, but like most of the time they're not thinking of you. They're not like thinking, oh, I think this is going to harm them. And I choose me. I think it's important to recognize that like it's not that simple, and so a lot of the guilt attempt to try to get someone to change their path, although is the feeling, the thing that you're realistically feeling is true, it may not be getting to the thing that you actually think you're getting at.
You're actually probably making them want to use more.
Yeah.
And that's not to minimize those people's feelings. There needs to be a time where that's acknowledged.
Yes.
And you know, amends are made there, and
yep.
and hopefully some restoration.
Yeah.
Sure. Of course.
But
okay. Okay. You're a monster.
Yeah. So, I at that time, 2000 and. I don't know, 16, I was addicted to cocaine and using heroin in the IV fashion. I was drinking uncontrollable amounts of alcohol, and my wife was done. Mm-hmm. I remember my mom was, you know, you always think you got your mom.
Yeah.
And she told me, don't call me mm-hmm. until you're ready to go to Teen Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't even try. So I called her. I was busted up, and she brought me to the Teen Challenge Chicago first.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there, and I was there for about 8 months, and some things started to get pieced together for me, I think. But unfortunately at that time, the program was on the verge of shutting down.
Yeah.
And there were some things that transpired, and I ended up leaving early. And I don't know, 90 days later, I was back off to the races.
Yeah.
And I called and asked if I could come back.
Yeah.
And the director there was like, you know, we know you too well and you know us too well. and he actually completed Sheepgate in Colfax. So he's like, why don't you go to Sheepgate in Colfax, Iowa? And I hung up on him. not going to Iowa.
Yeah, not
like
that,
that wasn't what
I
we
saw
were
the pamphlet. No, yeah,
that wasn't what we were talking about.
Sure, yeah.
So I don't know. Another 3-4 months alone, addicted. There was some other situations, and I was just like, you know, like I kind of mentioned, last house on the block. I said, you know, I'll try Teen Challenge in Iowa, Sheepgate, and if it doesn't work, I'll die a drug addict, and I'll die an alone drug addict. My wife, I wasn't living at home. Kids weren't talking to me. So I called my mom I had been using, and I said, I want to go to Teen Challenge, Iowa. And I had been working on the application process, and it was actually the next day that I was supposed to go. The night I reached out to her and I said, can I sleep on your enclosed porch? Don't let me in your house.
Yeah.
You know, can I sleep on your enclosed porch? And that was on purpose because I, you know, I couldn't trust myself then.
Sure.
Yeah. So she, I got a backpack, sent her to the, pulled the car around front and went in her pantry and emptied her gin into my Monster screw off bottle. And she drove me to the bus, and I rode 5-6 hours to Des Moines, and I was picked up. And that was 2018. So,
okay. And yeah. So you got to Sheepgate, and how or in what way was that experience different than the other times?
I mean, at first, it really wasn't.
Yeah.
I hated it. I was, you know, in a town of 1,200 people up on a hill, again, in a facility of men, which had been the story of my life, on a bunk bed, without my family.
Yeah.
So, and I was institutionalized at that point, so my mind automatically just resorts to what it's been trained to do.
Yep.
So I'm kind of a hard, you know, hard shell to crack. But you asked what was different, and I think the difference maker there was I was broken.
Yeah.
Mm. Nothing had worked. Prison hadn't worked. Juvenile programs, medication, counseling, countless 28-day programs,
sure,
countless detoxes. Nothing had worked. And I just kind of was at a point in my life where I think I knew deep down. I wouldn't have admitted it back then, but I knew if anyone could help me, God could help me.
Yeah.
And it was a safe, sober environment. So that's what was different. It was far away and isolated, and
yeah,
sure.
So
yeah, tell me, was there were there any unique relationships that kind of started there? People that were going through it at the same time, or anything like that?
Yeah. So, I think that I didn't trust early on, so I would watch the staff members interact with other people. I wouldn't give them that. Mm-hmm. Satisfaction to get close to me, but I'd watch. And I watched as they broke down walls with other students, and I watched different Christ-like mannerisms or attention that they would give people in crisis. And I think I just saw the realness in it. And I remember there was a turning point for me. My wife, you know, she wouldn't really answer my calls, or if she did, she put the kids on the phone. And there was a night she was having a get together, and she really wouldn't talk to me. And I think I was there 4 months, and I was always kind of like, you know, when we get on the phone, I'm like, are we going to be together? Mm-hmm. She'd be like, well, I'll tell you what, if you don't finish, we won't be together. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's what she would tell me. And this one night I was convinced that I was going to call her the next day. And I was going to say, you know, either we're going to be together or I'm leaving.
Mm.
And I vividly remember praying that night and just, I don't know, kind of arguing with God and being mad about where I was and where my life turned out. And I won't say it was an audible voice, but it was, there was a peace that came over me as I was thinking, you know, it's now or never, Jared.
Yeah.
You know, you're your life is a wreck. Mm-hmm. And I committed to, that night I was like, I'm going to finish the program and I'm going to serve the Lord whether or not I ever see my wife and kids again.
Mm-hmm. Come on. Wow.
And from then on, I could map out an insane story of restoration. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love being reminded how good God is, right? Like, just, like, even when you had the wrong opinion of him for so long, thought so poorly of him, you know? And, like, there's always a thing inside of you that's like, I want God to be this good God. I want him to be all the things that people are telling me, but, like, the people around me that are trying to explain it to me, like, they're either telling the story really wrong or God really sucks. Mm-hmm. Because, like, this doesn't seem like any of it's true.
Yeah.
And like just to have him, like, I've been down that road before where it's not an audible voice, but yeah. A thing shows up and like there's like a phrase or like a really big calm feeling over, you know, and you're like, you end up taking this big old breath and you're like, whatever, all the things that I had lined up to fight him with, he like swoops away with one quick God movement and he's like, are we done now?
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, that's okay.
Yeah.
There's something beautiful about a God that knows you so intimately and like knows every bit of the broken and like every bit of the things that you have tried to hide from everyone else, tried to hide from yourself, that shame has told you is like unforgivable, that God couldn't possibly use you in or take you back from, the God that sees every bit of that, but then loves you so much that goes, I'm going to love this person enough to come in this moment and peacefully say, we got to go.
Yeah.
Like, we got to move.
But
like,
that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
That,
yes.
That is the magic sauce of Sheepgate. When students can encounter that, which you just described, and feel that peace that you were describing, the rest is history.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
If they can continue to hang on to that, because you have ideas of what my mom thinks of me, or what my wife thinks of me, what my dad, how he failed me, or I was beat here, or this happened to me, nobody's going to love me. And when you have a personal encounter with Jesus and he's saying, it's okay, I love you, you're enough, you're my son, then it's time to work.
Exactly. It's just that lightning strike of circumstances that God's like, if you respond here,
it's time to work.
I can change everything.
And it's that,
I can, like, redeem all of it. I can change all of it. And everything I've ever said about you and everything you've ever been told about me is true.
Yeah.
And like, I'm here. I love that so much.
It's so crazy that, like, because you could read the Bible flat your whole life and never miss him calling you son. Mm-hmm. You know, I miss it every time, right? And then when he does it, and like the weight of that, like both falls on you and gets lifted at the same time. He basically replaces it with this, you know, and he's like, you're my, and you're like, look, I, whatever you do, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
And you like, and God's like, I will help you restore. And where restore's not going to happen, I will help you cut.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any wrong way to come to know the Lord, right? But for me, it wasn't by way of reading the Bible and like, wow, this is cool. Or this is, I believe this. It wasn't Awana. It wasn't church camp.
Sure.
He was real to me first.
Yeah.
And then I was like, everything about him has to be real. And then I started to dive in and I was like, oh, wow, this is.
What
this
an
is,
encounter, man.
This isn't just, you know.
That's incredible. It's like, wait, this is capital T truth.
Yeah. Insane. Like,
yeah.
Insane.
So from there, what you're still at Sheepgate.
Yeah.
So what happens from there? And maybe like how do you see some of the relationships that were around you restored?
Okay, so you guys might know Michael Foreman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So Michael Foreman would do my monthly evals up until that point, and he'd pull me in his office and he'd ask me questions. I'd look at the door. I wouldn't even give him the respect to look at him. Like, he was young. He had, in my opinion, hadn't gained my trust. I was trying to disrespect him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you haven't earned it. Leave me alone. Let's get it over with. So next morning I come down, and I've done enough programs in my life where I was like, let me get all the education and requirements out of the way early, because your family's probably not going to be around early. Mm-hmm. And then when your family starts, and this is me hopeful, you know, hopeful thinking, when your family comes around, you don't have to worry about education or requirements. You can kind of focus on the energy that, you know, you can focus your energy into the family and fixing things and moving forward.
Yep.
So I went to him, had never said a full sentence to the man. And I came to him, it was right before Christmas. And back then they were doing 7-day passes when you had been there 5 months, I believe. Mm-hmm. I had been there 3 months. Christmas was a few weeks away, maybe a month. And he said, I said, you know, Michael, my wife won't let me come home, but I'd love to go see my kids for Christmas. And he looked at me, and not with like, oh, I got him now, or now he needs me, but with genuine love, and was like, well, how long have you been here? I told him 3 months. He's like, how long? Or he's like, where are you at in your education process? I said, I'm done. He was like, you're done? I was like, yeah, I finished it. And he was like, he wasn't even in charge of passes. He was like, what if I could get you home for Christmas? And I broke and I cried, and I haven't cried in years at that point. Like, they tears just didn't work.
Sure. Yeah, right.
And I cried like a baby. And so he got me home. I remember the lady who was doing wives ministry came to me and was like, what's on your kids' Christmas list? And I could hardly pack clothes. They sent me with so many gifts for my kids. I have 5 kids, right? So I'm on this bus with all these gifts. And I remember Michael telling me before I left, he said, Jared, he said, and I was staying at my mom's house. My wife didn't want me home. Mm-hmm. And she said, Jared, he said, go home and serve your family. Mm-hmm. He said, don't have any expectations. Just go serve. And I went home, stayed at my mom's, but while my wife was home, I'd come home, you know, clean and help with kids. And there was a honey-do list of things that I hadn't been around to do.
Sure.
And I just served. And it was not, you know, I like Michael said, I didn't have any expectations. I just served. And I got on the bus and I came home. There was no fireworks. There was no wife saying, I love you now, I want to be with you. I came back. And now looking back, I think that piqued interest in my wife, because that was something that I had never done.
Sure. Yeah.
There was always conditions. There was always expectations. There was always a motive. But there was none. And I believe when I released my family that night in my bunk, mm-hmm. And took that step to God, he started taking steps from Iowa to Chicago and started speaking and softening my wife's heart.
Right.
So wife's unsaved, kids are unsaved.
Yeah. Yeah.
We kind of lived that life. So there was a wives weekend, which she had always ignored.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
She'd ignored the ladies, she'd ignored the process, and she showed up. And I didn't know she was coming.
Well, that's cool.
So I had been there at this point at 6 months, and she just shows up. And she's like, don't think this is us getting back together. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
You know. So she comes, first night is like worship. Wife standing in the back. I remember this lady's up front worshiping with her shoes off. My wife's like, what is she doing? What in the world, right? So I'm like, I don't know.
You and me both, woman.
Yeah. So the next day there's a speaker, and they were getting a pool out front, and they were doing a huge baptism, and I think they invited the community for it. So there was a speaker, and I hadn't had physical touch from my wife in 6 months at that time. And the speaker was, I don't remember what they were speaking about, but she grabbed my hand. And I remember like getting chills, and I tried to act like I didn't feel it, right? You know, like just keep paying attention, you know? So speaker's over. We're going to get something out of her van, and people were lining up for baptism. And we're at the van, and she said something along the lines that she wanted Jesus in her heart. So we prayed that together, and then she said, I think we should get baptized together. So we went and stood in this long line. It was hot outside, and I'm like, man, she's gonna change her mind. Change her mind,
it's
right?
Too long. Yeah, this line gotta keep going. We gotta get in this water.
So they get me up there. They get her up there, and the guy in the water, there was two guys in the water, and staff were on the ground praying. And they were, you know, speaking words over people as they were baptizing them too. And, that, you know, got her in the pool, and then they were like, well, you're Jared's wife, you know, make the connection, like, Jared, why don't you come in here too? And they baptize us, you know, down with the old, mm-hmm. up with the new together. And that that was the start of the restoration. And life wasn't perfect after that, right? Like there was still a lot of work to do, but I went to the Omaha part of the program and I remember telling her, you know, I want to come back and serve. And she was like, absolutely not. We're not moving to Iowa. Not happening.
She also got the pamphlet.
But she's growing. I'm growing over these next couple months. And we're on a pass in a hotel room. And we're laying down and she was like, I think we need to go back to Teen Challenge and serve when you complete. Right. So I'm like, wow. Okay. So we make it happen. And she's still a baby Christian at the time, and this is right before COVID.
Yeah.
And she had been at the same job in Chicago. This is before, no one in her office was remote at the time. Mm. And she went to her boss and she's like, hey, I want to put in my notice. We're doing this as a family. And the boss was like, well, will you hear a counter? And my wife's like, I mean, I'll hear it, but we're going to go.
Sure. Yeah.
And he offered her a remote position, her same position, and a raise, right? And I'm going into ministry on intern pay.
Yeah, right.
So it was just what she needed, right? God showing up tangibly, like saying, I got you guys.
Of course.
You know, so 2000, it was 2020, January 2nd, we moved to Colfax. And since then, all the kids have accepted Christ. One of my daughters went on to do YWAM.
Come on.
Kids are playing college sports. Girls are thriving.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, we're restored. God, he did his thing with us for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow, yeah.
I love that so much.
So how would you describe your current role at Sheepcake?
So I'm the program director.
Okay.
And what that entails is on the staff side, making sure the staff are properly informed and serving the students to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
But it's also to be there for the guys too. And my role has changed since I've, I guess, promoted, for the lack of better words, to more staff focus. Mm-hmm. And I do the disciplines for students, so I can get, for the guys who aren't trying to change it yet, right?
Yeah,
it's God's time. Jared, you don't want to go to Jared's office. Yeah. It's bad.
The Chicago comes out.
You know, I mean, it can. It definitely can. I you know, open opportunity office. But the guys that aren't there yet, they stay away from me.
Yeah.
Sure. But the guys who are chasing after the Lord and wanting change, even in disciplined situations, you know, I have great relationships with him, and I can kind of, I do my best to walk things out with him. And
sure. Yeah.
So it's a cool role, because I'm kind of still there to lead staff, but also doing, you know, what my heart loves, and that's to help guys get the same freedom that I was afforded.
It's so cool. Well, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of cool in there. But to see, you know, the things that you run from are the things that God can often use so powerfully in somebody else's lives. I think about, there's not a lot of things that are more embarrassing than having a porn problem, as an example.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, I mean, it's even more acceptable to be like, hey, I got pot and booze, and you're like, okay, yeah, I'm in heaven. But like the number of like Christian dudes who are willing to go, yeah, this has been an issue for me,
sure,
and
yeah,
using it to help other people to like bring stuff out of shadows. And like, I know what you're going through, I know what you're struggling with. And like, the thing is, it's just how often God uses those types of things so that there's somebody who they can connect with and go like, it's hard to look at someone who's just never had your issues. It's not like the gospel can't permeate that. It totally can.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, you can see the things that are coming out of their mouths, that are going in their mind, because they came out of your mouth. They're like,
oh yeah,
you recognize it.
Oh yeah. And it's unique in that it helps, right? Like for me, all the countless treatment centers I had been in before, sitting across from me as a counselor in their clean polo and had never walked a step in my shoes.
Yeah.
Right. So for me to come to Sheepgate when I did and watch staff, you know, that were 5, 10, 15 years out, married, kids, investments, vacation, like, not that that means everything,
you're
but
like,
just
investments. Well, it's, just standard paycheck would be great.
right. And it's possible.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, it's possible, and it's possible because of what?
Yeah.
So give me that.
Yeah.
Right?
Give me that.
Right? I don't care what it looks like. I don't care what I have to do.
Sure.
You know, I've been sharing needles and whatever else to feed this, you know, dark addiction. So why wouldn't I do whatever it takes for the flip side?
Of course. Yeah. Right.
So. You know what? I was just thinking about that. Well, I think what's unique there is that you could hear that same message from all kinds of people. And it's just as true when it came from whoever. But it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe if it's coming out of the mouth of someone that, like, who didn't have the same life you had.
Sure.
But like, to your point, like, if you start seeing people and go, not only are they saying something I may have heard before and kind of dismissed, but like, look, it's working.
Yeah.
Working over there. How do I think about, like, you? There's a it's a phrase that I use. What is it? It's like there's a holy
twinkle fingers.
No.
Oh. A holy twinkle fingers.
I don't know. That's what you were doing.
Exactly. You know, a holy twinkle fingers?
If you are saying that, you should stop it.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. I just got embarrassed about it.
There's a holy twinkle fingers.
It's people, like, they have to reckon with something that's hard to understand. Like, hey, I don't think this is true, but it looks like it's true over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing as you think about interacting with people in the culture. Like, people, like, I believe people who follow Jesus or Christians are like this, but what do I do with that guy? He's not like that at all.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's a dissonance in there. It's like a whole, I think that's what I wanted, holy twinkle finger dissonance. It's like, like forcing people to reckon with a reality that they were willing to write off and go, but how do I explain the witness in that guy's life, imperfect as it is? There's something there that actually, it doesn't fit into the category that I stuck it in, you know? And so I think it's powerful, even if the polo guy told you the same story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it didn't create the dissonance that you had to, like,
for
work
sure.
through.
Shame is a pervasive liar. Like, shame is so good about showing you that, like, if you look at someone that has never looked like you, has never walked through the things that you've walked through, has had problems that in your approximation seem much less devastating than the ones that you've gone through, right? Like, you can look at that and go, yeah, of course God forgave that guy.
Yeah.
Like, of course God's love took care of that dude. What did you do, steal a stick of gum? You know what I'm exactly. Like, that dude in the clean polo, okay, you lied to somebody one time? Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm glad that the Lord's love can cover that with you for grace. But, like, I've done immeasurably horrible things. Like, I've done terrible things before. God's love can't cover that. God's forgiveness doesn't take that. God wouldn't look at a dude like me and go, I died for that.
Mm-hmm.
I bought all of that. Every bit of that sin I purchased already. And I'm waiting to redeem what I already paid for. Like, but when you see somebody that goes, oh, that actually breaks that cycle of shame's lies to me, because they go, but I can't look at that dude and say that anymore.
Yeah, right.
I can't look at that situation and go, oh, that's obviously, that's easy for God to forgive.
Yeah.
You got to look at that and go, dude, that guy's been in the same stuff I've been in and is walking in freedom and is walking feeling like the grace of the Lord, and that, like, his sin was purchased.
Yeah.
Maybe mine was purchased too, because it's no longer at this gradient where, like, I'm way down here, dude's way up here, of course. Now I get to look at, we're both that have been at this rung before. God can reach down this far and grab it.
Well, it's crap. That feels like the only people I get to witness to. I look like a guy who would witness to a dude who passes fake 50s at a credit union.
There's a place for that. There's a place for that, though,
and
we've got some pastors and stuff that we've hired intentionally that, you know, haven't been through the program, and they offer such a priceless asset to our team.
We do talk about this a lot, because, like, there's super great stories. Like, that's a lot of the things that you were saying, right? Like, it's not a lowering of the sin weight, right? But what you were underestimating is how big God's grace was.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you had all these things built up as if you were going to reach a plateau of which God's grace is like, I can't quite get it.
Yeah.
And so, like, you weren't misunderstanding your sin because it weighed on you and you knew it. Right? But what you were misunderstanding was God's grace. And so, like, what we talk about this a lot because what's really awesome to watch God restore and renew.
Of course.
And, like, you always forget about this dude that, like, grew up in it. And, like, he was faithful in it. And he was there, like, all his whole life. And he was, like, 70 and nailed it, like this Enoch type character who just walking with the Lord.
Uh-huh.
And like everyone's like, look at this, you know, milk toast of a dude over here that like got no trouble. And I think, by God's good grace, did this man faithfully pray for everyone he ran into, right? And like, he didn't avoid all trouble. In fact, almost all the trouble he took on was somebody else's.
Uh-huh.
And so like, you're like, we forget about this guy over here. And like, I suppose just as I get older, I'm like, I wish I would have been more of that guy.
That, like, that dude just had the armor on every day of his life.
Paul's like, by no means. And we're like, but I got to have a great story. Otherwise, no one will listen to me.
It's so funny. I've been in recovery circles before where like I tell a little bit of my story. And then like people are like, yeah, I totally get that. Like I've been in those kind of shameful situations. And then my wife walks up. And my wife has the most bland like testimony ever. Because she's like, yeah, I've known Jesus my whole life. I was the one who brought my parents to Christ. Because I was like, hey, I'm in this. Do you guys want to take me to this Sunday school and like show up and then like faithfully walk through that, led her parents to start going to church because she was there all the time. And then they found Christ and like changed their whole life. Right. And I for a while I was like, I don't want my wife to come into these spaces and like talk because like I don't want her to get booed off stage. Like I don't want people to be like, dude, she doesn't know anything about my life. She doesn't know any of this thing. But I will tell you, the women that watch my wife talk about, she's like, yeah, I've loved Christ my whole life. And like I've walked with him and I've done all these things and he's covered me every day and there's never been a fall or a brokenness. And my wife is sinful. That's not what I'm saying. But like she's just walked. And to watch these women go, oh, there are people that are safe. Like there are people that have just always been safe that I've never understood. And like God isn't just a God that shows up after hell has broken loose in your life. God isn't just a God who shows up when everything's broken. God is a God that shows up and like is always there. And there was something beautiful about watching these women go, I need to talk more to this woman because like she's got a story that looks nothing like mine. And I'm even more intrigued to know about it because like they've heard all the stories of women who have gone through sexual assault, women who have gone through broken marriages and broken relationships and have been abused by fathers and stepfathers and all these different things. And she's like, that wasn't my story, but that doesn't mean I wasn't walking with the Lord and needed him to walk with me. And they just go, I don't have to be a product or defined by my broken story anymore.
There we go.
I can be defined by the God who wrote it and like allowed me to walk with this. And it's so beautiful. And like, I think that's totally fair is we get the side of going like, hey, I can only listen to someone who's been through hell. And that's very true in a lot of situations. And that space is so beautiful when God shows up and redeems it and just cleans up that mess. But we cannot discount the beautiful stories that are Enochs and that are walking with the Lord.
Did you say you had a little bit of a different story than your wife?
Yeah.
And I think what attracts me to that is not just that she had that different walk, but that she carries the same grace and love that God does and is able to marry you.
Yes.
Right?
That
like
is,
she's not
that's
judge,
what
she's
we're
not
all
judging
thinking, buddy.
You.
She's
not judging you. And what people need is they need to see the hands and feet
that's
of Jesus.
Exactly right.
And,
yep.
And that's her.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Right?
And that's the beautiful story that we get to tell because like I get to go to people and go, my wife walked with me through hell.
Yeah.
And I was the one who was bringing it to our door.
Yeah.
And I was the one who was inviting it into our living room and into our bedroom. And my wife faithfully, like when I came clean to her about all the gunk, all the broken, all the stuff, even after we had been married and I went, babe, it never stopped.
Yeah.
Like it never went away. I stayed sinning and breaking your heart. I've betrayed you in all these ways. My wife turned to me when I told her the lowest of the low crap that I'd ever told her. And she just looks at me and she goes, okay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean? Okay. And she goes, I'm your wife. Like nothing changes.
Yeah.
Nothing changes here, but you get your butt to this. You better make sure you're talking to the men in your life that you trust, that you're not afraid of, that aren't in those situations, that you can go, fellas, I screwed this up and I'm in hell and I need your help. And she goes, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And like my wife looked at me and forgave me in those moments to where shame that had lied to me my entire life no longer had a voice because of that woman.
Yeah, that's good.
It no longer had a voice because she looked at me and went, I'm not perfect, but I got God and I can forgive you in this moment because I know my father. And like her identity, I tell you sometimes that she has a very like, I always walk with the Lord story. And sometimes if you're looking at it wrong, it doesn't sound like a powerful testimony. But I can tell you flat out the strongest and most like, holy terrifying woman I've ever met is my wife.
Yeah.
Because she, like, I'm not afraid of her. I'm afraid of her in right ways, but like in many situations I look at her and I go, oh, I'm not just talking to my wife in this situation. She walks with my father.
Yeah. That's
like,
right.
I know her daddy.
That's the thing.
I know her daddy. And like, I know he knows everything.
Yeah.
Like, I know he knows every bit of this. And he loved me enough to yoke me with that.
Yeah.
And like, I can walk humbly with my father now in any way looking to smell like Christ because my wife held my hand and went, I'm not leaving.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not walking from this. I'm pissed. But I'm not walking from this. And I love you enough to hold your hand as you lead me towards my father. And I'm like, deal. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna do that. And that's terrifying.
Tell me that don't wreck every category.
Dude, like it just, it is something different about going like, oh, this woman knows her father.
Yeah.
Like there's no manipulative power in my broken past that says that I can do the things that I've done before to women that I've done before and treated them horribly. Cause my wife isn't standing on sand.
Yeah.
Like my wife is literally built on a rock. And she looks at me and she goes, you can't hurt this.
Yeah.
Like you can't hurt this, but you better get your butt up on this rock with me.
Yeah. Dang, yeah. God's good. I tell you what.
Yeah.
I tell you what.
So what? Well, maybe let's talk. We talked a little bit about how maybe you're hearing the story, and people come to mind, right? Like you listen to Jared's story, you listen to some of the story that we're talking about, and maybe there's an encouragement in here to have hope. Like there's a lot of places that feel like it was the last stop in people's lives. I've had it. I've seen it in people that I'm close to, people that we've tried to help, and you're like, I don't see how they come back from this. And the reality is they won't personally.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, God ain't seen a cliff he can't navigate.
Sure.
And so have hope. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be a struggle, because humans continue to make choices that cause them to be struggles. And sometimes it takes that for people to get to a spot where they're willing to go, my way ain't working. But people will do a lot to exhaust their way. And like, I don't even say this to think about addiction like stuff or life consuming things. I don't know. I probably could come up with some pretty good things in my own life right now. Where I'm like,
absolutely.
Lord, I'm just trying to tie this thing off.
Yeah.
I'm going to handle this my own way, and then I'll check back in. You know, like,
I don't need to hand this to you, Father. I'm going to hold this.
It doesn't have to be a boulder. It can be a pebble in your shoe. It don't mean it's not causing you trouble.
I think that's actually a great thing to think about, because like sometimes, and I always thought, like, I don't know, maybe God's just like, this has been a gift to me, right? Is like, I look like some of the stuff that is life controlling issues, right? And I think I have those. Mine just aren't illegal. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
mine,
totally.
Mine just aren't causing like the level of harshness that, you know, God's like trying to get you to a place where you see him. And like, I could just as easily smoke a pack of Bronsons every 2 hours, and it's completely legal. Nobody cares. No one's like, what's wrong with that guy? You're ruining society. Yeah. You're breaking your mama's heart.
Same broken,
over there
different
just
face.
Shoving them away.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And so, like, it could be Juju bees or, you know, or nerds, candy, like, anything that's controlling you. And so, like, whenever we say addictions or life-controlling issues, everybody's mind goes to, like, this big red letter, like, your mainline in heroin.
Yeah,
you know, but, like, you could literally be Twix barring yourself to death.
Agreed.
And everyone's like, yeah, he's a pretty stand-up member of society. Jesus is offering freedom from all the things that control you.
I often think about that, like, whatever, I'm like 43 years old, and I have a hard time saying no to the gas station and saying yes to a sit-up. Okay? Like, I just don't.
I literally stopped at the gas station on the way here.
Never felt more known in my life.
Everyone but Jared has been identified in the room. So, but here's the thing. And so, like, you know, you kind of, I'm not super hard on myself. I'm like, I said I was going to do it. I tried to do it. I didn't really keep to it. oh crap, I stopped and got the thing again. And you, maybe you do it three or four times in a week or three or four times every 2 weeks. And the thing is me and the guy that I know who has trouble saying no to meth have got the same blocker
same
in my mind.
Same problem.
Right. It's like, he lost a moment. I lost a moment. The thing that I lost a moment on just isn't like, one, society doesn't look down upon it, and it's not like eating up my insides near as bad. But like the same lack of, I didn't follow, I didn't honor, I didn't, you know, I didn't tell the truth in any of these things. Like, it's the same thing. Yeah. And I got a lot of I think about differently about people who are struggling with the thing that just happens to be killing them faster than the thing that I tried.
Sure.
Yeah. And that I'm doing, you
same
know?
So like you said, though, that, you know, God offers freedom from everything. And I think what's cool about, at least from my experience with Sheepgate, getting rid of or experiencing freedom from life-controlling substances or issues, the feeling feels great, right? So once the drugs are gone, then it's like, am I eating too many Twixes? Let's attack that, right?
Yeah, right.
Or am I stopping at fast food? Let's attack that, right? So I want to keep... You know, that feeling feels good, and I've kind of learned how to combat some of that, those thought processes, and it's like, I want to keep peeling back the onion.
I think that's just like a militant attack of whatever you're putting on the throne in your life.
Yeah.
Like, recognize anything else that isn't God sitting on that throne is idolatry and sin and brokenness. Yeah. And anything where you go, God, your power isn't strong enough for this thing, or I'm not trusting you with this, or I love this more than I love your ways, it's got to go. And too often we look at that and go, if it's not catastrophic sin that breaks your life and the people around you, it's not that big of a deal. And it's just not a way that the Bible talks about, or any, like, Jesus does not speak about it this way, that like, oh, I'm here for the biggins. Like, I'm here for the big stuff.
Yeah.
But like, anything else, nah, I'm not super worried about it. It's like, no, like, any bit of this piece that you break of the law, like, it's all broken and lost.
Yeah, it is interesting, too, that like, just the things, not even just like societally, but like Christian society. Like, we're like, you know, we can't let the drunkard in here, but like, every one of you is getting like soaked in greed and arrogance.
Yep.
And we're pretty comfortable with that.
We don't like to get all wild up about that arrogance stuff.
Yeah. And as long as we can't see that your house is on fire, we're fine with it. But if you got dark closets that are on fire, we don't care.
I've been reminded of this story because I've had experience with fellas that went through Sheepgate, right? And so like, we do a hymn sing at our house, and I invited them out like a couple, 3 years ago, and it was awesome. Like, they were great to talk to, and they came up when they got here, and they're like, hey, you should be careful. We really like to get into worship. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, we might do the Holycopter. I'm like, definitely want to see this.
Yeah.
And so like, but the reason I remember this story is because we're talking about like Sheepgate is basically like, we don't want anything owning you, right?
Yeah,
this
right.
is the thing that we're trying to let you rely on Jesus. And so like, they show up and like, they're super excited and they're super cool to talk to. And I was, and then they all started migrating towards the coffee pot, like, like 15 of them. And I'm like, hey man, what are those guys doing? And then all of a sudden we're out of coffee. And I'm I made enough coffee for 150 people.
And like, I said, Jared's like, not as yeah.
I said, but not 150 dudes that are going to suck down 15 cups.
I said, hey, fellas, what's going on with the coffee? They're like, well, we're off coffee. We're like, we get like one cup a week. And I'm like, well, no one told me the rules. I basically put a big bowl of meth over here for you guys. Like, I feel terrible.
Yeah, we've had guys brew coffee in the shower in a sock.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, it gets, and we don't, they get, I think it's a cup a day or two cups a day.
Which is reasonable.
It is, because if you don't, we've taken, you can like need medical attention from too much caffeine.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like it's that's a thing. So there's like, there could be midnight runs to the
totally,
ER.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, you gotta,
it's stopping your body from doing things it's supposed to do. Like, yeah absolutely.
It's a real thing. And some people are at that place where it's like, well, I can't have this, I'm gonna overindulge in that. And it's just like,
I will tell you, I've gone to AA meetings before, and like, we're in a room that probably supports no less than 25 people comfortably. Yeah. They have a percolator that is the size that you would get at a full-size truck stop.
Yeah.
Like, this thing is rocking through gallons of coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this room can't support more people than like a real big living room. What are you guys doing? And then I'm watching throughout this meeting as people are going and getting third, fourth, fifth, six cups of coffee. And I'm like, oh yeah, I get it. I forgot where we're at. Like, I totally understand. This is the one thing they're allowing themselves in this situation. A dude's shaking in the corner, and I'm like, I don't know, friend. Like, I maybe we gotta like we gotta go down to a K cup and a Keurig. Like, yeah. maybe make it a little bit more laborious to get six cups in. But like, that's totally fair and that's funny.
I would say, just so I can round out that story, because it wasn't to roast the dudes. It was more like I because I knew what they were like, where they came from, and what they were doing, right? And like, I was convicted because I'm like. Like, these guys basically reset their life.
Yeah.
Right? They said, look, it's all got to go, and we're going to let God build up a house. Right? And I thought, I don't have near, like, the restrictions on my life, the boundaries that I should probably have. And, like, it was just in that moment, because I had a bunch of people there, and I needed to go do a thing. And, like, I just started going through it. I'm like, Lord, I don't guard my life the way that you do. And, like, these fellas are convicting. They didn't even say anything. They're willing to do the helicopter, and they're willing to drink a bunch of coffee. And I thought, I am so glad I invited these guys. Right? Like, they're just, I just watched them, and I'm like, they've reset their whole life, and they said, God, build from up. And when God is wants to be generous and go, hey, I'm going to have coffee in Mike's house, you guys can go two cups in, you know? Yeah. And they're like, this is the best day ever. And I'm like, I could drink seven cups, and I wouldn't even think to thank him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm saying, I was like really convicted about the whole thing.
Yeah.
We are so saturated with comfort. And like saturated with things that we, it's our way of enacting our own power. And like rarely ever do we go like, God, I don't want anything unless it's from you.
Yeah.
Like I just don't look at my life that way. And I rarely ever am I going, if I'm your temple, it ain't clean in here. Mm. Like it's not clean in this place. And I'm inviting you into this space and asking you to make it holy. And I keep bringing in crap. Mm. Like I keep putting gunk in the ceremonial bowls, Lord. I rarely ever take a stop of my life and look and go like, beyond just the catastrophic things I've done before, like what else has got to go?
Yeah.
What else needs to go? And I think that that's such a very refreshing way to look at that from the perspective of like, I'm not just here for the big things. Like God is not just asking to come into your life and clear out the big fires. Like he wants everything that's not of him to be gone.
Yeah.
And we just, when we have freedom, rarely ever do we in any way, one, survey ourselves that way, but two, offer God that power and go take all of this and then follow it up by not continuing to bring more stuff
in. Right. You're not like, hey, Jesus, I got more freedom. Help me figure out how to spend it. We're like, hey, I got chains. Where you at?
Right, exactly. How many times have I said, God, I'm going to invite you into this space, and then I keep shutting him out of the door again and then piling crap back in the closet.
Yeah, as you do zoomies around the room.
Yeah, Lord and everyone else, look into that corner. I don't want you to see what's back here. And God's like, What a superficial way you've invited me into this space. I want to inhabit the temple, and you keep me in one section. Yeah. Like, my presence is enough to take on all of this, so much so that when people come anywhere near you, they should feel me. And rarely ever do I treat my body that way.
I remember there was a sermon I did one time, and for some reason, like, that particular image of, like, people letting Jesus into only parts of the house was so funny to me. Because, like, there was just this image of Jesus, like, standing awkwardly in your living room looking around like, hello. Can I go in there? Or like,
you got a do not go there sign, Jesus.
Looking in the medicine cabinet and stuff. And it was so comical because you're like, he
already knows.
What are we doing? It's such a facade. Yeah.
What secrets do you think you're holding from the Holy of Holies that knows everything?
Right.
He created everything about you and watches all of it. And you're like, I really hope he doesn't see in this corner.
Yeah,
it's like, I made the freaking corner. What do you mean? I got eyes everywhere.
It smells like Glade air freshener in here. Who are you fooling?
You're fooling. I created senses. Shut up. I'm right here.
Oh, man.
Hey, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us so far this evening. Hey, if you got feedback for us on the show, you can hit us up on the Live from the Path complaint line. Number is 517-0085. That's call or text 515-517-0085. It is the complaint line because that's most what people will use it for. But if you have good things to say and you need an outlet for that, I mean, I suppose.
Yeah, you can say nice things about Jared and then get back to reality and tell us we suck. Like, yeah. I think that's perfectly acceptable to use the complaint. As a matter of fact, I might even send a text message to the complaint line that says, hey, Jared was real good. You guys all suck.
I will tell you this, though. I did get a message on the complaint line this week. And it was because at the last show last week, I said, hey, I got a big surprise coming. Big surprise in Life from the Pathland. Big surprise.
Dang it.
And I said, what's that, Mike?
What? I might know what's coming.
So I say, big surprise coming. Give me a week. And then I get a text on the complaint line 3 days later and says, Mike's let the cat out of the bag, has a picture of him showing off the surprise to numerous people. Numerous people.
They're really excited about it.
It sounds like you're really excited about it.
Okay, I'm excited about it. I don't know why. And people love me when I show them surprises.
There's the reality.
I think very low of myself. I need people to fill my cup up and be like, hey, you brought a surprise to me.
You are that creepy fisherman that's got the $1 bill on the end of the thing. It's just like, hey, love me.
Hey, see, I know stuff.
I got something cool to show you, friend.
Anyway, Mike was called to repentance through the complaint line, and he's not repented at all. He's, in fact, he showed more people later on that week.
Say, he probably doubled down.
I have yet to feel the Lord's conviction. Right now, it's just from you guys. And I can shoulder that all day long. That don't bother me at all.
That's a real good way to take in a rebuke from a brother.
Mike says the complaint line is not the Holy Spirit, and so we'll have to see how it shakes out.
Spirit of discernment is within me, and I didn't hear anything from you.
Yeah, okay. I see neither one of you descend like a dove.
Okay, we're going to ignore the fact that everybody that Mike knows a secret. I'm still not going to tell you. I do hope, I was hoping this week, and I ran into some troubles, but maybe next week. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe you can get a bag for the excuses you keep bringing on why this thing ain't ready.
I'm fairly certain there's something in Proverbs 23 about the exact thing you're doing right now, friend. You got to figure it out. Stop dangling secrets in front of people and then not showing up being.
It wasn't a secret.
I thought you were a drippy faucet. I got to do better in my old testament.
I thought it was a wife. I thought it was a wife complaining on the roof. Solomon.
Yeah. Solomon, Proverbs 24.
Okay, let's real quick, because we
got to wrap it up.
Yeah, we got to wrap it up. But I just, the one question that I had, and I think maybe we'll pick it up maybe longer at a different time, too, because I'd love to, anytime, Jared. I know you get up early, but, like, doors open.
Okay.
But, like, just with the stuff that you've seen, I think there's always people with a thing in their heart that says, I want to serve Jesus, I want to serve people. But it's hard to tell when you're helping and when you're not in, like, provision of, I think about your mom allowing you to sleep on the porch, right? How many times you let that happen? How many times, hey, I just need $5 to tide me over to help me get to my friend's house. But like, just those types of needs and, like, it's... They're real needs. Like, sometimes they're real needs, and they're the thing that makes the difference. And then sometimes they're just manipulative things, and, like, it's super hard to sort out. And I think it's hard. And, like, I know you see it from all kinds of people in all kinds of ways. And I think maybe we started with, but maybe it doesn't get all that less complex. But, like, I don't know, anything you would share with folks who are thinking about how to help people without contributing to their destruction?
So there's three things I think of when I think of enabling. One thing I do now is I try to be prayerful, mm-hmm. right, and be in step with the Holy Spirit, not just mm-hmm.
Your buddies,
not just my buddies, yeah. right? But the Holy Spirit, because I think there's quick story. There was a guy went to Sheepgate, left the night before. I was riding down where he said he is homeless, and I was with my wife, and I'm like, hey, what if we see him? And we didn't see him, but the next day I was going somewhere and I saw someone walk, like, the back of him, and I thought it was him. Uh-huh. And I did a U-turn, called my wife. I was like, I think I see him. So I pull up, he's cutting through yards, and I'm like, I yell his name, he turns around, I roll the window, I say, come here. So he comes, he gets in the car, so you need a ride somewhere? And he gets in my car, and I'm smelling him, I'm talking to him, I'm looking at him. And I drive him a couple blocks to where he wanted to go, and I'm praying as we're in the car. Yeah. And he doesn't ask me for anything. Yeah. And I felt led to give him money, and I rarely give money. And I gave him $20, and I said, I don't care what you do with the money, just promise me you'll at least get a bag of chips.
Yeah. Nice.
And I sent him on his way, and I haven't heard from him, right? So there's times where I do feel led to do things like that, but it's not when they're asking me per se, when I feel pressured. So that's one thing. I would encourage people to be prayerful. Another thing, my son wanted to go, he wanted college paid for to play football.
Yeah.
And early on in his high school time, my wife and I we'd sit at the round table, right? We'd say, he needs to do this, he needs to do that. What about this? Let's do that. Let's get him in that. And neither one of us played college football.
Right.
And it came time where we were so invested in him and we were arguing about things, and I finally said, Nicole, we need to talk to the people who do this and stop acting like we do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I would encourage families to talk. There's people who deal with addiction every day.
Yes, yep. Yeah.
So don't try to reinvent the wheel,
yep.
Right? Talk to people who do it. That's my second thing. And then the third thing is, I think what it takes for an individual to achieve or to gain freedom is for them to put their hands up and surrender,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Everything, right? And for us, it's God. Surrender to God. Say, God, here I am. Have your way. I've been doing it wrong. I'm sorry. And we're in his care, right? Yep. We believe that. And I think families need to do the same thing with yeah. their loved ones. Mm-hmm. I think they need to put their hands up and they say, God, you've got them. I'm giving him to you, or I'm giving her to you.
Yep.
And just like you want that individual to trust God to do that in their life, we need to trust it as yeah. their loved ones to do it in their life. So yeah. it's multifaceted, but.
Boy, that number three smacks in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It, you know, I had a small, okay, this is going to seem like not near as impactful, but it's along the same lines. But I thought of it because of the story about college.
Yeah.
One of my kids is just had started college, and she's not quite sure where she wants to go or what she wants to go to college for. So she's taken some early classes, and there are some things that she's interested in. And I just remember, like, her mom and I and her having a conversation, and there's just a lot of kind of the same thing. Like, we're talking about something like we know what it is to be an archaeologist yeah. or a linguist or something. I'm like, we don't know any of these things, and we're not even. It's 10 steps down the line, these questions and thoughts that we're having. We're not even one or two steps in. And I just remember thinking that, like, we don't have to know all the things. And, like, do I not trust Jesus with her future? Like, mm-hmm. if God is good and she's listening, isn't this just going to go the way that it's supposed to go? And it doesn't require me to, like, mechanize the whole mm-hmm. thing and set it all out. Because then what it sets up is that, like, either she's going to disappoint her parents, or we're going to be like questioning on, I mean, I wouldn't question what God was doing, but, you know, like, you set expectations and then they're not met because they should not have been.
Yeah.
The problem was that you set an expectation is like, this is how it's going to go. And it doesn't mean that, like, you just sit on your butt and don't do anything until the Holy Spirit forces you over. There's plenty of good prescriptions in Scripture mm-hmm. that you should just be out taking action.
Yeah.
But I do think the risk is that, like, we there's things where we take over the God position, especially when it comes to kids, because you're like, I brought them this far. Isn't it my job to continue to guide them? I'm like, I don't know. They said yes to Jesus. Maybe we should do,
yeah.
like, let that happen.
Yeah.
And not think that, like, we have to prescribe all the things. And so I think it took the temperature down a little bit on that particular conversation. But it's of a similar yeah. ilk, just to recognize it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hey, you're listening to Life from the Path. Jared's going to hang out with us. We just got a few more minutes. I think we'll do the Dear Life from the Path.
Okay.
And then we'll save some of the other stuff for a show in the near future. Anyway, Jared will still be here in case there's... Jared, if you have any advice in reaction to these questions, you got to jump in.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, ready?
Yep.
Dear Life from the Path.
Yes.
My husband, Andy, and I have been together for 25 years, married for 16. We have three kids, ages 14, 11, and 9. Our marriage has always been a happy one. Andy began a government job 5 years ago, and after 2 years, he was traveling a lot. Once he started traveling so often, I had a hard time adjusting to being everything for my kids and not having his support, and he began to resent me for getting so upset every time he left. Travel was not supposed to be part of the job. We have had huge fights. Andy is drinking a lot, and I found out he had an affair. This has been a huge personality change for him. The man I married would never have had an affair or treated me the way he has. My husband is angry and distant all the time. We are in counseling and trying to figure out if we have anything left to salvage of our relationship and for our kids. I keep getting mixed signals about where Andy stands. In some conversations, he's all in. In others, it's like he can barely look at me, like I did something wrong. Am I a fool for trying to work this out?
I don't think you're a fool for trying to work this out. I think hope is powerful, and in fact, if you don't have any hope in it, it's done already. This man's a problem, and he's struggling. Whether he's struggling because he wants to, or whether this is something that he's fighting hard on, is not particularly clear. But no, I would, on the base question, I don't think you're a fool.
Yeah, I like this is it's pretty classic. It's not just of dudes in general, but it like it, this is kind of a general dude thing. Like and like funny enough, like along lines of addiction, like you like when, usually when folks want to paint a picture, they give you one option and say this is how you can help me. Right. Or like this guy sees, hey, I have to have a job. I have to have this job. I have to keep this job that causes me to travel. Right. And then from like 3,000 feet up, you'd go quit. You need to stop traveling.
Yeah. Yeah, right
you need
now.
To hang out. Like,
yeah, right.
Like, we'll
are
sell
these
the
real
house.
People?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, yeah, these are real people.
Huh.
Yeah.
To answer the question, I'd need to know if he quit the job.
Mm, no.
Because if he didn't quit the job, then...
You think she might be a fool?
She might be a fool.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something... Yeah, that's. I think that's a fair... Like, if she's brought it up and said, hey, here's the deal. This seems to be a place where a lot of these issues that we're currently having has stemmed from. Mm-hmm. And... I need you to like put your foot down and go, this is no, if this is where this is coming from, we eliminate this. Like we eliminate the stressor, we eliminate the space, we eliminate the issue of like, she's feeling broken at home, she's getting overwhelmed. You're like, this is very obviously a problem and a space where this has just been allowed to fester.
Yeah, now this guy, like to be fair, like this is a revealing of a problem that already existed.
Agreed,
right?
I was gonna say also.
But like to keep this in mind, and we talked about this, I think maybe 3 or 4 shows ago, like, If it was just Mike's advice, because I traveled for work some, I don't do it. Just don't do it, right? Yeah. Like, if you're going to commit to a woman to be her husband, and if you're going to commit to kids to raise them as a father, right? Like, sell your house, buy an apartment, and work at Walmart if these are the options for you.
Yeah.
But, like, your presence there is worth way more than your money.
100%.
And that will always be true. And, like, you will get blinded in your, I don't know, we'll call it 20s to 30s, that you're like, hey, I got to provide a better life for my kids than I had, right? I don't want them to worry about getting band shoes because the school had to provide them because we couldn't get them. And you're like, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And if you ever think that outweighs the fact that you weren't there for bath time, you're a fool.
Yeah,
right. You believed a lie, right? Because like all those bath times, they add up to a lifetime, right?
Sure do.
And like you're like, well, when they got into the World Series of Little League, I was there. And like, that kid don't care. Yeah. He's on the high of the World Series of Little League. They're like, my old man's here. Great. I don't even know him. I barely know that guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like, that sucks.
But
and
they
like,
noticed every time you weren't.
Dudes can get blinded this way. And I don't think it's out of a certain amount of arrogance. It's just, not, it's not wisdom. It's foolishness, you know? And so like, I would like across the board, no matter what you do, I like if you're traveling, your wife and kid better be traveling with you. Mm-hmm. And this is the life you decided upon as a family. But otherwise, I'd get out of it right now.
And I think you hit the nail on the head from the perspective of like, this is probably symptomatic of much bigger things. The statement of this is not the man I married kind of thing always gets me weird because I'm like, it is. It just didn't look this way because of certain stressors that might not have been
there. And you didn't see the change because he wasn't at home.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And like, I think there's something to be said that like the kind of guy that like affairs don't just happen just because he was bored. Most of the time, like that's coming from a space where like there's something about him that he hated about himself was led to that. There was something about the relationship there might have been shame between you and him that he already felt the distance that like he felt bad about. And then that caused him to go that different way. It's just you're looking.
Think that's always true.
No, not always true. I just think
couldn't
that
he
like
just be a real horn dog.
I think real horn dogs come from a misunderstanding of what sex is. I think like the kinds of people that have never had a good relationship with what that should look like in a good marriage, of course they don't give a crap about that. And like if you didn't learn that kind of sanctity, or even if you did, but there's something where shame drives you to pornography, shame drives you to affairs, sin drives you to the further wedges in these kind of things. I just think it's foolish to look at that kind of thing as that's the only thing that I should focus on, and not recognizing that those kind of actions stem from a more broken or more evil place that's just not let God in.
Yeah.
And
I think people just lose moments because they're selfish. I mean, it can be that. I don't think it's always that.
That's why I said specifically it's not always that.
You said it was always that, and it's embarrassing.
Interesting. Okay. That was a weird exchange. I don't know if we were arguing there, friend.
Okay. So the overall question was, Dan, is this woman a fool?
I say you're not a fool. It's worth fighting for, but he probably needs an ultimatum.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is how
he
it's going
to
look.
Choose what direction he's going to go.
Yeah, you should yell at him and tell him he's selfish.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, here's the thing. If he don't, life experience. Here's the thing. So if your wife is the one that has to tell you that you need to stop traveling, you've already failed at this, right? Yeah. You basically make a woman say, you're going to have to tell me to quit. You're supposed to be leading your family, you ape. Yeah. You should have quit 6 months ago, right? And said, I realize we're going to be poor, but we're making bad moves here. I know zero dudes that travel well. Zero, right? There's one weird guy every once in a while that can travel and be fine. Most of them, nope, they're not. We're just not built for it. Yeah. We're not. So, sure. Like, you need to quit right now.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what the secular says. You are not a fool. You feel your marriage is something worth fighting for. I'm glad you are in counseling together. That your husband is willing to do this with you is a positive sign. Andy is having trouble looking you in the eye because he feels guilty. Some subjects that should be raised during some of your joint counseling sessions are whether the cause of his ambivalence is that his affair isn't completely over, how important that government job is to the welfare of your family, and whether all of his increased travel was more related to the woman he was seeing than to his job. You have my sympathy. I don't know.
I mean, some of those things I agree with.
I mean, some of these, like this is where the complicated gets to be right. At the core of it, your whole family needs Jesus. All this thing needs to be restored. Like it all has to be done through a foundation of who Christ is. Because otherwise, it's his morality holding on with every ounce of strength that he's got.
Yeah.
And he don't have enough. He going to let go.
Yes.
You know, so
see,
like,
Christ yourselves. See Christ together. These kind of things will, what Jesus can get into and fix.
Okay, well, one more real quick. Ready?
Okay.
Dear Life from the Path. For 35 years, I have liked a guy I met at church. Holy cow. 35 years?
Wow. I'm 34. I've literally done nothing for 35 years.
I came out to the womb and I looked at dreamy eyes over there and I'm like, I just can't wait.
Look at that one.
Okay. We're moving on. Maybe it makes sense. Here we go. He was the minister. We never dated, although I developed a strong attraction to him. He lied about his personal life and then ran off and got married without telling anyone. He had been gauged the whole time, which left me hurt and heartbroken.
What?
Since then, I have dated other men, but while I move on physically, I haven't managed to do it emotionally. I have carried these feelings toward him for so long, and they have grown ever stronger since I became single again. I'm not sure why. He's far beyond my grasp, and I'm too scared to reach out to him. We live in different states. Is it...
Wow.
This is getting worse.
So it wasn't like she spent 35 years pining over him. Like, it was a long time ago, and then he got married, and she continued.
Sounds like it,
yes. Yeah.
And lives in Austria.
Here's the thing. I really wanted to be mad at the minister for a second, but I'm starting to think someone ain't taking the world in right.
I've loved Howie since the first day I saw him.
Hold on. It's almost over. Okay. Is this yearning for him normal? Could I be in love with him, or is it lust? I don't know. Listen.
I think you're in love with the negative space that a human is existing in.
I've met a lot of ministers. I mean, I don't find myself to be too outrageous, but like, I can't. There's not a lot of good looking ones. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're filled with the Holy Spirit because they're dangerous if they're good looking.
Yeah. So, these aren't the quarterbacks. These are the kickers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're going, where's the bass player?
Yeah.
He's going to be a minister.
Sometimes they're linemen.
Yeah. The guy playing the lead guitar, he's not a minister. So, one, this is weird. Two, I think she's telling the story like the minister like lied about his relationship and then ran off and married a woman. I think he just didn't tell her because she's weird.
Yeah.
And then he's like, this is just my wife now, and we're going to move out of state.
Yeah. You have not painted yourself into a good corner here, friend.
Yeah.
Like, I this is wild to me. Like, it really sounds like you have fallen in love with the idea of a human being one time, and like, in a minister's position, like they look to be trustworthy, and you may never have been able to trust someone before, and so that became appealing,
for sure.
It just spiraled out of control, and it sounds like this has just been festering because it's rotten for 35 years now, and like
years.
That is a wild time. It sounds like you've never had any good foundation to stand on with any good relationships with fellas, and I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry that this is the space that you're in, and like, it sounds like this is still incredibly raw, and you've never had any anything to land on here.
Yeah, because your marriage, like, to this other guy should have squashed this immediately, right? Like, you could, if your marriage was good,
sure, yeah,
and you had a decent relationship with this guy, you'd been like, oh yeah, I remember,
but
when
you
I
could
thought
be honest with your husband, and he goes,
once.
Yeah, that's friggin' weird, Ethel. Maybe you should stop that. And like, what? I love you.
Do you see that? But the options she gave were like, is it possible I'm in love or lusting after this man? Like, I kind of thought am I just lonely and this is a nice guy that I kind of landed on? But she did not give that one as the option.
No.
It's either I love him or
or he's man candy.
This also, I don't know if I trust this person's understanding of their options.
Yeah,
right?
Like, to be able to lay them out well.
Yeah.
Nothing about this says, oh, this person definitely gets love and lust
Dan,
at the same time.
Dan, has this ever happened to you as a minister?
Have you ever been the good-looking minister up on the pulpit that someone's just
every week
pined after you?
It happens all the time.
I get all kinds of letters.
Dan, have you ever been a kicker? No.
No, wait. Dan told that story one time where he went over for some normal reason, and there was some lady in a robe.
Oh. No, she was in full lingerie.
Oh.
And she was like an extremely beautiful. It wasn't like a cute girl. She was beautiful. She was like one of those, whoa. And I was so naive. I thought, man, this is weird. And I went in and said,
why would they invite
me over?
You had
some questions about Jesus, right? Yeah. Like, okay. And we talked a little bit.
Gosh.
And then I thought, well, this isn't going anywhere. So maybe we'll meet again sometime. Yeah.
Dan, you shamed me because you walked into that situation naively and went, I see no harm in this.
I see nothing.
I DoorDashed one time and a lady knew I was coming to her place and answered the door in the full buck.
Well, yeah, like, we had a full apartment too. She knew I was coming.
She was fully nude.
Nude.
And I thought to myself, hey man, I'm the kind of fella that a gal will do this to. I'm not surprised by this at
this
all.
This just comes with being me.
I got back in the car after dropping off that Pizza Hut, and I sat down in that, and I looked at the rearview mirror, and I was like, that's good. This is what she saw, and she went, I got to take all these clothes off. And you look at that and go, I didn't even register that there was a woman here
Well, no, I mean, I thought, man, she's a very beautiful woman, and she's mostly naked. And I thought, because I even said, well, you remember I was coming, right? Oh, yeah, I knew. And I'm like, okay, well,
Wait, Dan National lampooned this situation.
Sir. This was young, right?
I was in my 20s.
In 20s, yeah, okay.
No, it was in my 20s.
Anyway, it happens to Dan.
Yeah, it happens to Dan.
It was like 30 years later, I thought, wait a minute.
like 30 years later, wait, she knew I
think
I was
in this
coming.
Room even.
Wait a minute.
Dawn, I'm like,
she was fully aware I was going to be there.
I forgot to read the last sentence. Okay, By the way, his name is Dan Hudson.
That
Dan,
was 35 years ago.
She's been pining after you for 35 years.
Boy,
now is your time to tell her.
I get your number
you
out of the
know.
Book, Dan. I get off Facebook right now. Man. You're in trouble.
Now, I did, after that, get in my car and call my wife, text her, whatever. And I said, this was weird. This happened. And it's like, oh, okay. And then I went home and I'm like, this explain this is weird just in case something ever happens from this.
Yeah.
And
that was the right move, too.
She kept coming to church. But
I don't know how. Awkward. Wow. People are bold. I'll give them that.
Yeah. 35 years, Dan. All right.
Here we go. All right. Wrapping it up. Yep. Here's secular's advice. I don't think it's either one of the options you gave. I think you were in love with the fantasy of having a relationship with an idealized person upon whom you have projected values he didn't live by. I don't know about that.
Yeah, that seems unfair.
For some people, this seems safer than the challenges of a relationship with a real person, flaws and all. What you are doing is wasting your time. If you really want to have someone in your life, consign this crush to the past and focus on the future.
I don't think I ever watched Fatal Attraction, but is this basically Fatal Attraction?
I've not seen it either.
Yeah, I haven't.
I don't get those channels.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I mean, just by
some
the
classic
context
movie. Of, somebody following,
Oh, boy.
Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Hey, big thanks for hanging out with us this evening. Jared, thanks for coming in, man. We
Absolutely.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, you can get more information about Sheepgate. You just Google it. Just do Sheepgate, Iowa. You'll find it. It's in Carlisle. It's actually, the facilities are pretty cool.
They are.
Or Colfax, sorry.
In Colfax.
Yeah,
they do vehicle auctions.
Yep. We got one coming up in a couple weeks in October.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's over 100 vehicles.
Yeah, and like I look through them all the time, and they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Then I have to tell my wife I did it, and then I don't ever buy any. But like, there's cool stuff there, and like they do, like you guys have like a gutter.
Gutters and downspout company. Yep, micro enterprise. So.
Yep.
You guys like install them and stuff?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah. How do you do that someday?
So anyway, like basically what I'm saying is I think especially the fellows in this room, I can vouch for the work they're doing.
Great.
I can vouch for the way that they help people. I can vouch that they keep it centered on Jesus and they do number two was, hey, like why don't you ask some people who are constantly working with addiction to help you? These are the people we're going to recommend, right? So, like, reach out to them if you have questions, if you have people you're worried about, if you want someone to pray with you about all that and help you sort through it and you're not even ready to pull the trigger yet, like, just give them a call. And then if in the meantime, if you got some vehicles you want to get rid of or some gutters to put on and help those things continue to do all the good that God's designed it to do, like, I just really consider doing that.
Yeah, okay. Agree entirely.
We gave you a vehicle once. See if you remember this. It was like a 1970-something.
What year?
Did I give it?
Yeah.
It was in the last 5 years, probably.
Okay, so I was there. Okay,
it was from this. We used to hear that. Anyway, it was like a 70-something pickup with a big boom thing on it. And it was a snowplow. And like, it is the ugliest thing you've seen in your life. It sticks out. You see that and you go, that's different.
I don't remember.
Okay,
that.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, Dan, it would have been more fair if you were like, we actually gave you a Batmobile.
Yeah.
Hopefully you remember that.
There was a guy living in it, actually. Thought he was Batman.
It's a family raccoon.
We thought it was a 2-for-1. Can you help the Batman and also the
possums?
Sheepgate, can you help the Batman? The Batmobile's in the deal.
We can help.
That's right.
We've heard about childhood trauma before. We can help Batman.
This Batman thing is controlling my life. All right. Hey, you've been listening live for the Path. Thanks for hanging out with this evening. I don't know. We may not be here next week. I'm not sure. But in the meantime, be faithful in means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.